This episode of our This Week in XR podcast is sponsored by Zapper. Zapper is one of the world's leading XR companies. Over the past 12 years, they've won numerous awards for memorable campaigns. They've democratized AR by making tools and SDKs that anyone can use. And they created Zapbox, the world's most affordable mixed reality headset. Most recently, Zapper worked with Unilever to create an enhanced QR code called Accessible QR, which enables packaged goods to speak to the blind and partially sighted. If you're thinking XR, give the team at Zapper a call or visit zapper.com to see how they can help you on your XR journey. Good morning, everybody. I'm Charlie Fink. It's This Week in XR, April 12th, 2024. I'm here with my friend Ted Shilowitz. Roni is on an investor call for one of his mysterious, exciting new ventures. So yep. We'll wish him luck on that and get to the news.
Absolutely. Excited to talk.
Yeah, gosh, we've done this almost 200 Fridays.
Feels like we need to do a play on Broadway about it or something.
Well, we're going to do a play on it at the event stage.
Oh, that was a good lead-in, wasn't it?
So the last day of AWE... you and I will be live on stage. I'm trying to figure out the guest situation, but I think we should just talk about AWE and any notable news and make the audience the guest. But I want to do it in a way that is not just people lining up to talk at a microphone.
Yeah, we need some suggestions on creative way to do it, right? I don't know how.
Because I want to include not people that we normally have on the show, because. Right. Confession, we try and get the most senior people we can because that's the way you get views or downloads. But, you know, there's so many regular people, great developers, people who have small startups, and even relatively little people at big companies. Mm-hmm. And it would be great to have an opportunity for them to be on the show and to hear their take on the industry and where we are. I just am not certain how to do that.
What do you think about this idea? What if we make an open call, put it out on LinkedIn, do it here on the podcast, where we ask anybody that wants to talk about what they're doing at AWE and do a little Q&A with us, send us a little 30-second video on what they're doing. We can post those videos so that they can get some exposure.
I love the way you and Roni think of work that I should do.
That you have to do. We'll find someone to do it. We'll find someone that will help.
Lauren is also a helping hand, so perhaps she can play a role.
I just think the wireless
situation is so bad in that room that we may not be able to include Roni. We'll have to do a test, but it'll have to be wireless. They can't drop a line. They say Zoom is ridiculously.
Oh, because he can't come in person. He's on the East Coast.
I doubt he'll drive. I guess he can fly since Deb wouldn't be coming with him. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he's planning to come to AWE. Mm.
Okay.
So anyway, so major story this week in the New York Times. I don't know if you saw it, but it was a quite lengthy investigative piece into what these big companies really think they're doing when they breach the firewalls. Of
yes, not only did I see it, I'm deep in the pool on this, Charlie.
And so the answer is, of course, I hope Roni would be here because I know this would just set him off. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard to argue you didn't know you were stealing content that you shouldn't have.
Yeah, when behind
you
the paywall.
Emails from executives saying, do we care we shouldn't have this content?
Uh-huh. And material that's literally behind a paywall, that it is paid content you have to get to. Right.
So, I mean, I get that it's, you know, part of 10 billion parameters. But honestly, what kind of morals do people have at these big companies, and what don't they understand about firewalls?
Well, this is, you know, this is the classic case of disruption versus ethics, right? I mean, the famous phrase of Facebook is, what is it, is break things and go fast or something to that effect.
Go fast, right? And break things. Absolutely. Yeah. Famous phrase.
And, you know, how many things are we breaking along the way with no degree of responsibility from these companies in the art and science of evolution and disruption, which, of course, you and I are fans of. So we're caught in the middle. This is, like I say, I use this terminology all the time. It's a classic Jekyll and Hyde situation.
My guess, it takes 10 years to win through the courts. and ultimately OpenAI, which will is destined to become one of the largest companies in the world, will just write a check for whatever, 10 billion, 20 billion, whatever it is. And they'll have the cash and they'll write the check. And people can pound sand because divided up among 10 billion people, it's going to be a dollar.
And there are all kinds of little nuggets. I'm sure you uncover these things all the time. We should have a company called Crusoe on the podcast because I learned about them a couple of days ago from listening to another podcast called Acquired, which everyone should listen to. And they were talking about this company that builds these data silos and data ports, essentially these NVIDIA farms near power plants that have excess power throwing off. And they can't use it. So the big data companies like AWS, Microsoft, and Google have to have their data centers where internet traffic is, right? Because the quickness
Right.
of time
Reduce
matters.
latency.
Correct. But these other companies that are doing AI processing don't have that same restriction. So what this little company is doing, and now it's becoming a big company, is building these data silo worlds next to power plants in the middle of freaking nowhere. And they're lowering the cost of this potential AI processing, which no one knows sooner or later who's going to pay for all this, right? Beyond the VC market. So I thought it was really interesting. It's just an interesting thing.
Latency is a big deal. So when I send you an email, if we're on a Zoom, it seems like it takes forever to get there. In reality, it takes about 15 or 30 seconds, which used to be instant and is no longer instant. So our toleration for latency, and AI, by the way, has massive latency,
Yeah, of
right?
course,
When
because
I
they're
type
processing
something
all this
into
stuff.
Google Gemini, we could play a little TV waiting tune
It's
while
got to
it
run all those
thinks.
processors. Right.
So I think bandwidth is going to be bandwidth and compute capacity are the gold of the future. I mean, they're the gold of the current economy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's
And the
going to
platinum
get
of the future. Yeah.
more important in the future. So last week we talked about Suno, another copyright minefield that drove Roni crazy. Now we have Udio. And they've got the backing of big celebrities, including Andreessen and in venture fund. And so they pulled $10 million together and they've got will.i.am and common celebrity endorsements and investors. So it just seems like this space is getting crowded, which is remarkable given the number of minefields there are.
Well, it so looks like Internet 2.0, right? In terms of what are the levers you pull? Raise some capital, get some celebrities, get a cool name, get a cool website, see what happens. We saw this, we know how this story ends, right? That most of these companies, because they're duplicative in their services and deliverables, the one with the best service to technology ratio will likely win. And they need the enough marketing capital and working capital to drive it, right? Most will go away in the ether. But we're just an interesting time. So we'll mark this time in the mid 2020s as the beginning of that bubble, and we'll see what happens.
I was just thinking the other day about how we talked about XR in 2018,
And
2020, even in
the
2020,
metaverse. Yeah.
and
Yeah.
even during the pandemic. And if anybody went back and listened, I was also looking interesting at the numbers for our show, which we get from Acast. And it's funny, we really, no one was listening to this show really
Until
until around the time Roni joined us. It was a little before then that we started to scale, but it was really in 2023 when Roni was with us full time that things
it's a
started to.
tech celebrity thing, right?
Now
People have been
Roni
following
is
Roni.
people care about what Roni has to say about things,
Absolutely.
and he's funny and charming and unpredictable, so that makes him a great co-host. So anyway, I think if anybody went back and held us futurists accountable, we'd be pretty embarrassed.
Our track record. Yeah.
So Spines, AI publishing platform. They're a platform to do it. So if you're writing AI books, now you go to Spines and get it published everywhere. So yeah, it's a great idea, but they're targeting other AI publishers, and that part, if they really can scale the number of customers, is not good news for people who are looking for books. Because just going to clutter up a market which is already very
Yeah,
noisy.
books as an industry is sort of a downward spiral, right? As you know from personal experience.
Well, certainly, and certainly if you're crazy enough to increase the cost of a book by adding AR to it.
AI and AR,
So here's one. I'm wondering if you heard of this. Director and producer Eli Roth has a VR series. So this is a
Yes.
spatial entertainment series, of which there's never been one that has been done seriously, like the ones that are done by streaming services. I guess Zuckerberg is one of the producers, and it just came out. I have not watched it, so this is not a review. It's just letting people know that it's out there, unless you've seen it. It's called The Faceless Lady, and
Yeah,
it's
I've just seen that.
supposed to be scary as shit. And Variety went absolutely bonkers in their review of it. So that's queued up for my weekend viewing.
Yeah, I've just seen the trailer because I've been traveling this week, so I haven't seen it. That'll be post NAB. That'll be the first on my viewing list. Eli Roth is obviously a horror director of note. People like him and like his work. So, I think it's an interesting play because I think with Apple leaning into Vision Pro as a content device, right? With still very limited offerings, but some big Hollywood talent with Jon Favreau kind of doing stuff, and we're like, well, this is really interesting. And that Wire Walker woman was really, really compelling. I think it was smart on the Meta content team to go, our device is pretty good at this too. Let us throw a little money at a director of note and let him work. And I think what's interesting, at least from what I can gather from the trailer and some other things, is it's not just straight narrative. There's interactive components to it. So it's this holy grail that we've been talking about for years, this idea of synthesizing and hybridizing linear content and interactive content in a format that starts to like trigger both muscles, right? And we've seen really, really good high-end video games do this for years and years and years. I often tell my friends that one of the seminal moments in video games for me was a little-known game called Heavy Rain. And if you haven't played it, you have to go back to the PlayStation 3 era to play it. But it was really interesting how it drove story through interactivity, really emotional story, a connective sort of detective novel with a kid and all this drama, and how you use the controller was really interesting. And then we see with VR, there's been attempts at this, but no one's really kind of cracked the code yet, and we'll keep watching. So this one might be the one that cracks the code. And if Zuckerberg and friends are the ones on the right side of history here, well, it'll be interesting to see, So
Well,
I'm kind of tracking
that's a great point. Let me take this one from the business standpoint of
it.
it. Stop investing in games, start investing in 3D content, or really not just 3D, because ties it to the old 3D movies. This is really spatial content in which you can simulate the feeling of being present in the movie. A completely different paradigm shift. So smart for them to go in this direction because the games thing has turned out to be meh. And
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a little industry. It's just not a huge industry,
they
right?
have
On
to
the VR
find a
side.
way to scale beyond 20 million headsets because 20 million, I mean, they could be in a position of owning distribution. They are on their social media platforms, but unlike Apple and others, they haven't yet leveraged it into a full-blown studio content operation. But this says to me, if this works, and this is popular, I think they're going to lean into it and we'll see a lot more of this. So I hope it works out for them because it would, as you said, be a lot more fun and a possible major new genre of entertainment.
And this is not the first time at the wheel. For us being in this now, let's call it 10, 12 years, watching these attempts at building story using VR headsets that would land at festivals like Tribeca and Sundance, very limited audience, very difficult to monetize, but interesting creatively and spiritually. It's just, when does it become part of the real conversation of people that don't have VR headsets on a daily basis, actually saying, you got to see this thing? And maybe this is one of them. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
So I just invited our guest in from the green room, Conal Gault. He's the CTO of Zapper. And as those of you at home know, every now and again, we have our friends at Zapper pop on the show. They have been generously sponsoring the show really for the past 2.5 years, which coincidentally, as I mentioned on the show earlier, was around when Roni joined the show and we started to scale. It pays for our assistant, Lauren, who does all the publishing and social media for the site and has proved to be a great, great partnership. Zapper has a whole different range of devices, and we're going to talk about devices and services, I should say. And we're going to talk about all of them with Connell. Welcome, and thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Lovely to see you all.
Great to see you. And boy, in the age of the Vision Pro, you guys have so many things right. I think there was a piece of terminology you used. I don't think Rony liked it maybe particularly a lot, but I think he understood it. Was something to the effect of magic leap for magic cheap? Was it something
cheap
to that effect?
That's Ted's talking about the wearable iPhone holder that simulates essentially the Vision Pro. You know, it's a very high resolution device, and the pass through on it, even close to your eyes, is very high definition. And they have actually achieved the goal, but it's no longer Magic Leap for super cheap.
Yeah.
It's Apple Vision Pro simulation for next to nothing.
I wonder if there's a new marketing campaign that is, if you don't have $4,000 to spend on a Vision Pro, get this instead, and you'll get a certain sense of what's happening, kind of thing. So maybe there's something there, Colin. We'll have to discuss more.
I know. It's really like sort of where do we start?
Uh-huh. Yeah. No worries.
Tell us.
The other way of thinking about it is you can have one Vision Pro or you can have 100 Zap boxes. Which would you like? there's lots of interesting stuff in the marketplace in general at the moment, isn't there? And Vision Pro, I think, is a really important game changer for XR because Apple do a very good job of making a device that feels premium, a user experience that feels premium. What they also do a very good job of is charging you quite a lot of money for it. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I suppose we come in at Zapper with things like our Zapbox headset, trying to say, okay, how close can we get to that high-end type user experience, but for a fraction of the price? Because for us at Zapper, it's all about trying to scale it, try to get this technology into places that otherwise couldn't afford it. That's, I suppose, true across all of our products and services at Zapper, but certainly no more so than Zapbox.
Zapbox is kind of a hobby for you guys. That's the funny thing, is you've got all these other businesses that actually generate a lot of money. And Zapbox, which you guys have been working on since I met you in 2016, that's where the old Magic Leap saying used to come in, because I think you thought you were going to simulate the Magic Leap, not the Apple Vision Pro.
Exactly. And when we started with Zapbox, we'd seen what Google Cardboard was for VR. So I think it was just when the first kind of Oculus headset came out, they made a phone holder that you put your phone into, and it gave you a VR experience that was quite similar to the Oculus type VR experience from that headset in like 2015 or 2016. And then a few years later, we saw like HoloLens and Magic Leap, both, you know, expensive devices, but different to Oculus, and they had this mixed reality concept. So you could see your real world environment around you as well as the virtual content that was being added to that environment. And so we thought, like, can we do the Google Cardboard thing for XR, for MR, at the in the same way that Google did for VR? And that's kind of what led to us starting with Zapbox. Unfortunately, there's not a kind of a similarly pithy name pun on Vision Pro that we've been able to find as we have with Magic Leap Goes Magic Cheap. And I should say that we love Magic Leap also. You know, we make tools for other headsets, including Magic Leap, including Vision Pro. And they are great headsets. They're great for the applications where the constraints work and they fit, you know, where it's possible to spend that amount of money on a headset. It's going to provide a great user experience. The key for us is can we produce something that gets a similar type of user experience at a much more affordable price point? And I think Zapbox kind of does that. And to your point of it kind of being, I suppose, a bit like a hobby for us, we are a small company at Zapper, you know, we don't actually have to ship that many Zapboxes for it to be a good financial decision for us at Zapper to do something like Zapbox. But it is still very early in its process in its lifetime as a headset. There's not huge amounts of content out there for Zapbox yet, although we're making it, you know.
You just introduced Multibrush, which is just by itself a reason to spend the $100, because Multibrush in mixed reality, with Multibrush being the open source version of Tilt Brush, still one of the best applications in VR. And making it a mixed reality application where the art you're creating is actually sitting in your living room, I think is really exciting artistically. And in fact, you guys had a video of an artist who you're collaborating with to show its potential. And I was just so impressed. And again, it's that theme of accessibility, that you don't need a $500 headset to use Tilt Brush.
Exactly.
And by the way, on the $4,000 Apple Vision Pro side, there is also a dearth of mixed reality content. So don't get yourself too hard on this, because there's not a lot out there at all levels of this business. I think that's just an evolving process, right? Where people have to find scale and find usability points, which you're studying and working on.
Absolutely. And I should say, you know, we do have a growing catalog of content for Zapbox. As you say, applications involving artwork, the great thing about it is people can spend as much time as they like in that type of experience. With VR games in general, you know, there's a ton of VR games on the Oculus Store, for example. But they're bounded experiences. You know, you go in, you play the game, and for the most part, at the end of the game, you've finished it, and you're then looking for the next piece of content. Things like Tilt Brush, there are as much time as you can creatively spend in that experience, and you're limited only by the bounds of your imagination with what you do. And that's why for us, it was a really important thing to do, to partner with OpenBrush, to get them to build the application using our SDK for Zapbox. And launch the app. It takes you from not to 60 straight away when you've got the headset. You can do some great stuff. You can spend as much time as you like doing it. We're super pleased with that. And you know, there's always more content coming out. Sure. And on its way. And as you say, to validate that sort of $100 price point is you don't need a lot of content for that still to be a great value exchange.
Where on the productivity scale? I mean, you've got interesting kind of MR little mini games and experiments around fun and enjoyment. But in terms of the productivity, use at work, use at home, use for the things you would do on a traditional computer, where does the Zapper, Zapbox sort of quotient sit in that world?
Yeah, so for us, that's not a focus for Zapbox.
Right.
What we feel is that, and even I don't think even Vision Pro quite demonstrates it well yet, that you've got to do a lot to get a user to spend a long time with a headset on doing the things that they currently would otherwise do with their laptop, keyboard, and mouse. That experience, that user experience, has to be at such a seamless and high quality level for someone to spend their 8-hour working day, for example, doing that. Apple, I suppose, they're almost there with Vision Pro. I think it feels comfortable to wear enough that you could spend some time using it. I personally feel it doesn't quite get to the level of I'm going to want to spend my working day in it. And with Zapbox, we're not trying to get there. What we're seeing with Zapbox is, here are the types of experience that people are going to spend a couple of minutes up to half an hour in, where they are enjoying some short form content. It might be a creative experience. It might be a consumption experience. In any case, they're going to have that headset on for an amount of time. They're going to get good value from it. They're going to take it off and they're going to get on with their day. And I think that's fine. That's a happy place for a headset, because you find the right context, you deliver great value to the user, and you're not trying to encroach on something where the user experience is.
Yeah, I think you're going to measure its success not in the amount of time spent in the experience, but the frequency of use. A lot of these devices, exactly, after the first month end up in a drawer. So the issue really is not how long somebody uses it, but if they remember it's in that drawer.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And with Zapbox, lots of the reasons why the headset gets left in the drawer don't apply. So one classic one is the headset charged? Like, oh, I've spotted right. this experience. I want to have it, but the Quest is in the drawer. It's not
happens
charged.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, it's a big lift for me to get into that experience. With Zapbox, it's your phone. Your phone's always charged. You put your phone into the headset, you put it on your head, you have that experience. The friction is much lower. And so exactly as you say, the premise for us is shorter form, but regular and low friction.
So let's move on to larger businesses that you spend most of your time working on. Zap.works, which is a WebXR development website that has a great freemium and premium levels of subscription. And I'm using it in my class. I wanted to tell you that because oh, cool. I'm trying to illustrate, you know, how QR codes work, right? Because thanks to the pandemic, we all know what a QR code is now. And as you guys demonstrate with the app, you can do a menu, but there's so much more you can do.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's like, again, it's one of these things where there's almost unbounded possibility when it comes to the types of content that are possible nowadays. With Zapworks, what we're trying to do is provide a set of tools that people can use to build that content, to explore the art of the possible when it comes to AR and VR and XR. It's one of these things where for the kind of uninitiated user, it can still be quite complicated, this industry, looking from an outside in, like, how do I get into AR? How do I get into VR? And there's lots of buzzwords that go around, lots of different headsets, lots of different technologies. And so what we try and do with Zapworks is present a platform that helps people get into that, gives them great tools that are easy to use, but then also has, you know, state-of-the-art tools that are incredibly flexible, that are building content that is accessed by, you know, many, many millions of people around the world. And so at one end, we have developers, designers using the tools to make their own content, educators using tools like yourself to make content and teach. And at the other end of the scale, we have creative agencies that are building experiences for big brands that are deployed widely using the tooling. And that's our strategy very much is let's present a collection of tools that people dip into at the level which meets their needs.
It's funny because at one point, I don't know how it is today exactly. I haven't been following it closely, but at one point there were a lot of these platforms for make your own XR or web XR. But the truth is, I think the herd has been culled a bit. But so there are all these platforms to help you make AR, including notably SnapLens Studio. And I used to use SnapLens Studio with my students, and a lot of them, it was too hard. It was just too hard. Yeah. But I haven't had a single person who told me it was hard to do it using Zapworks. So for those of you out there who just want to try making your own AR experience, you could literally put a QR code somewhere like your kitchen table and bring up an album of pictures you took in your kitchen.
It's great to hear your views and what you've said regarding our platform versus others, I suppose. I don't want to hate on other platforms, but we have...
No, they're, I mean, the Snap has fantastic templates and, you know, I'm not denigrating it in the least, but you really need to be like a graphic designer or, you know, really fluent in Adobe programs. It's not that you could casually walk in there the way I used to send my students in there to slaughter and, you know, make a AR experience. Now, yeah, I mean, there are some people who are more sophisticated than others, but for a class with, you know, 20 people in it, you're going to have at least half a dozen who are completely stumped when they look at that interface.
Yeah. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's a social network with an AR platform. That's an important part of it. But the product is not the AR platform. The product is the eyeballs of the users and the marketing and the advertising and that goes through those social platforms. Obviously, we're at Zapper, we're not a social network. And so the products we're building are products for developers and for designers and for people to build that content. They with that content, distribute it in the way that sees fit to them. They can put it on social if they like, or they can put it on their business cards, or they can use it in a teaching setting, etc. And that means that we have a different focus when it comes to building those tools. It means that we can focus a lot on the developer and try and make the tools fit the context, the application that of that user coming to build some creative content. You know, I think you've mentioned that there've been, you know, some runners and some fallers in the marketplace of AR, VR content development tooling. And a really important element to this is it's easy to build simple tools quickly. What it's very hard to do is build tooling that's easy to use but has a large degree of flexibility. Because there's this trade-off often between how easy something is to use and how much you can achieve with it. The very simple kind of way of saying that, I suppose, is you can just always add more buttons to do new things, but all of a sudden the user is trying to work out what button to press. Mm-hmm. So there is a trade-off there. And the challenge, and I'm an engineer, it's like, I love this challenge. This challenge is what gets me excited, is how can we make it so that users can get to that degree of flexibility, can reach the art of the possible with a set of buttons that's the right button for them at the right time. And that's a very important element to when we're building these tools. We call it progressive complexity. Things start simple. Soon things get more complex as your understanding develops, as what you're wanting to achieve gets more complex. And what we, I think, therefore achieve is a platform that's solid, a platform that people enjoy using and are therefore happy to, you know, subscribe to, and then will be engaged in, and will be building content, and that further engages them in that platform, and that's great for Zapworks. It's great for the user because they're building fantastic new content. It's great for the industry in general because there's more great AR VR content out there.
Colin, do you have a couple of really interesting success stories that you're proud of around Zapworks that, like, you know, kind of client, Connell, I mean, sorry. success stories that kind of are instrumental and sort of give the points to the listeners on how successful this can be. Things you're particularly proud of or found really interesting that use the Zapworks platform to deliver on that promise.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the first thing to say overall is the Zapper platform over the years we've been operating. At Zapper, we're now 13 years old, which is quite old.
Ancient in our industry.
yeah, exactly. And our content platform is not quite as old as that. It's maybe 5 or 6 years old, and of course been evolving during that time. And the Zapper platform as a whole has delivered hundreds and hundreds of millions of user experiences in that time. I mean, it's probably into the billions now. I haven't checked recently, but the Zapper platform has delivered experiences built with Zapper tools at high volume for customers around the world. That volume is made up from, I suppose, a number of campaigns at any given time that are delivering a high number of throughput, you know, a lot of users at any given time. And then a long tail of people using our platform who have all the way through from experiences that get, you know, large numbers of users, but through to experiences that are in the halls of a school where all that matters is that a parent once a week is going in and scanning that code. It doesn't need the volume. It needs the moment. And the successes in that regard are kind of across the board, and you can't use a single metric to understand them. I think recently we've had particular success with WebXR. So that, I suppose, deploying content for headsets over the web rather than through apps. And the benefit for that is you can make that content and distribute it very quickly. And so we've seen particular success with WebXR recently in terms of L&D training and events effectively. So how people can build content quickly, deploy it to headsets, and it's for the event they're running the next day. It's for the L&D and the training that they're running the next day. And so there's, you know, always evolving need depending on what is possible. And in general, WebXR and Zapworks and the type of tooling we're building is all about reducing the barriers to building that content and getting it out there quickly.
Right. Connell, so the quick turn is really important.
Sorry, go ahead, Ted.
No, I'm saying the quick turn is really important on this. That's where a big part of the business is someone has an idea, they're on a very limited timeline, they need to deliver it. They find you, you say, yes, we can help, because they've tried everything else. And it's like, it takes 3 months to develop this. And you're like, nope, you can do it in 24 hours. Let's show you how to do it. Right.
And, exactly. And the alternative is commissioning an app developer to, you know, spend 6 months building an app experience for you, which is, it's not going to work if you're trying to get something off the ground for next week.
Plus just the budgets, right? I mean, you're talking about something that's very modest to spend versus bringing an app developer in, even in the age of AI, is still a fairly costly enterprise.
So. Most people don't need to reduce the amount of latency that running a fat app on your device gives you. We were just talking about latency before you came on, Connell. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if it takes a couple of seconds for a WebXR app, which, as I said, is a photo, a memory, a menu. It doesn't matter if it takes 30 seconds for the menu to show up. It doesn't have to be instant. Right. So, but I do think that is when those latency problems start to be more resolved than they are today. I think that really is the browser of the future is going to be the mixed reality browser of the future is going to be the main way that people access spatial content.
Absolutely. And I think one of the most important things is that the particularly with XR and AR and VR content, context is really important. You know, where is the user when they're having this experience, and what is causing them to have this experience at the moment? Often it's a relatively spur of the moment, if you like, context for the user. They're at an event and have come up to a stand where they want to see the product that this company is selling, but it's an MRI machine, so it's too big to show, mm-hmm. or too big to bring to the event. So they're going to get their phone out, and in that moment, you know, they've got an option. If it's an app, they've got to go to the app store, they've got to download that app, they wait for the app to download, they find the app, they launch it, and they get a good user experience at that point. If they go to the web browser to have that experience instead, they miss and they skip that app store review process that app store install process. And even if it takes 50% of the time that it did to install the big app from the app store, so it's still less time when they're in the browser than if they downloaded the app, they get into the experience faster. I suppose the other way, the other alternative is, in those other contexts where a user has been able to install the app ahead of time, or perhaps, you know, they're installing it because it's an experience that they're happy to have later on in the day, or these sorts of things, that's where that really low latency benefit that you get from the app is going to be there. They're going to install the app ahead of time. That's installed. Later on, when I launch the app, it's there straight away for me. But most of the time, those experiences are kind of more spur of the moment. So you don't get the benefit of that installing ahead of time. The user still's got to do that before they can have the experience, right, if they're having it straight away.
Well, I also think there's a really interesting point, especially with mixed reality applications or applets, that very often developers and creatives get too sophisticated with their graphic goals and graphic aims, and they kind of forget the magic of mixed reality, even on a phone, much less in a wearable device, is the simplicity of it, is the fact that the real world is colliding with this digital world, and really smart, simplistic design choices work better, at least in my opinion, and I'd be curious if you agree, than overdone graphic worlds and sort of populating it with so much stuff that it becomes annoying. It's like less is more. That you never have a better example of less is more than in mixed reality, where you need to guide the viewer to what you want them to look at and think about while they're primarily in the real world, right? And I find that your stuff, that your development kit tends to lean into that form of development. Would you tend to agree with that statement? Because the simplicity of what you do, number one, makes it easy, makes it fast to deploy. And number two, actually makes it more effective, which I think is a valuable piece to discuss.
Absolutely. And I think there's two things to that. One is, I can tell you what is one of the most impactful experiences that we show at Zapper, and it's super simple, and we've shown it from the very start, and that is bringing a poster to life with a video. And it's, so it's super simple. It's the Harry Potter newspaper with moving pictures example.
That is a great use case. Every movie poster should have a QR code that brings up the trailer.
Yeah. And I remember very, very early in Zapper, we worked with Warner Brothers at the time. We did a project. We did exactly this. There's the a poster in Harry Potter, Most Wanted. I think it's Sirius Black.
Yep.
And I he's know it like, well. Yes. He's holding he's in his in the jail on the front of this poster, holding the bars, and he's like screaming and what have you. We did the very simple thing. We took the video of him screaming. When you pointed your phone at the poster on the screen of your phone in AR, you know, tracked to the poster, you saw the screaming head on the poster. And if you show that to people, it's like magic to them. They just see that and are like, oh my God, you've just made Harry Potter real. Like that's how it feels to them in that moment. And it is so simple from a technical perspective. Well, I mean, it's simple now that we have the augmented reality tracking technology to do that. The content level is simple because we just needed that video. And you know, a ton of the time when people are using our tools, they're doing things that are simple, but very impactful, as you say. We do have tooling that's also more complex. So we have a tool called Mattercraft that's a bit like Unity for the web, if you like. It's a content development platform for building 3D interactive content. You can build gameplay type experiences. It's got great animation tooling, etc. You can script in it, for example. And that's going to be great for certain types of user experience. People use it for building, you know, interactive training through to games, through to even just 360 type experiences. There's a huge variety that people can build with that. And the key is matching the content that you're trying to deliver with the audience that are going to consume that. Because sometimes the audience, all they need to see is the Harry Potter poster. And if all they need to see is that, and you've delivered them something that is absolutely completely bells and whistles, then you've missed the value exchange. There are definitely those circumstances where you need to go beyond and you need to build something that's more immersive or that's more getting closer to the outcome you're trying to achieve, you know, a different learning outcome, or demonstrating a machine in a way that's got to be nice and big and 3D and let you see inside it and see how it all works and these sorts of things. Those types of experiences are definitely important too.
One last thing. So we're running out of time, Connell. It's been a great conversation. Always exciting to hear the diverse number of projects that Zapper has going on at any time. And the fact that you're succeeding with all of them is a tribute to the teamwork and the years of experience that you bring to this.
Thank you.
But one thing your company is doing that I really, really like, and I've been very much, accessibility has been a theme. This year, it was a big theme at CES. Trying to bring people who have real world needs the benefits of XR. So you guys have been working with some giant companies, giant consumer packaged goods companies like Unilever, to put a new kind of QR code onto packaging. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So one of the things we have at Zapper, we have all of our own computer vision technology. So all of the things we've done for tracking people's faces or the real world or our controllers for our headsets, this is all computer vision technology built by our in-house research team here at Zapper. And one of the things that we realized was the technology is very good at detecting and tracking things that are high contrast and very small in the camera view. And as a result, I've been working with Unilever to produce a special QR code, as you say, that goes on product packaging. It can be detected by our app much further away than a normal QR code can. So if you imagine a QR code can go on a product pack, say about 15 mils in size, is that about an inch, something like that? And that's pretty small. If you want to scan that with your iPhone camera or your Android camera app, you can get about 15 centimeters away and scan that about half a foot. With our technology, that code can be detected from over a meter away. So that's like 10 times as far, and we can decode the content of it about five times as far, so like 60 centimeters away. So we get a really much improved distance scanning from the QR code. And so what we're doing with it is we are, for the blind and partially sighted communities, we produce an app, but we also embed our technology in the apps used by those communities. And when a member of that community uses our technology, they can detect a product on shelf or in their hand or in their home from much further away. And we can deliver curated product information to that user from that code from distance and very accurately and reliably. And so what this allows is for someone who cannot see the product packaging or cannot see it well enough to read the contents of that packaging, the things that we all take for granted that are written on that product packaging, with this technology, all of a sudden they can access that. So we'll deliver allergen information, we deliver the recipe information that's on packaging, or basically anything that's like physically on the product packaging now becomes available to them. And so we've been rolling that out with Unilever. I think we're on about 300 million products at the moment, and continuing to roll that out across other organizations as well. And it's just about scale, this one. It's about how do we try and get this code on as many packs as possible so this community can start to get the benefit of this product information.
That's really interesting. I'm an advisor to a startup that uses wearable devices for people that have low vision issues for macular degeneration and other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask them if they know about this, because it's, you know, they sell into hospitals and insurance sort of dynamics and doctors that help people that primarily, you probably know this because you're working on this stuff with the QR code. When you lose your sight, you often lose your front sight, but you keep your side sight. So you get this strange phenomenon.
What company is this, Ted?
It's called New Eyes.
New Eyes. Yeah, sure. They started out making surgical loops.
Yes, correct. And they still do that. They do these loops that are digital loops sell into surgery.
And they also already do have a product in this market, which does autofocus.
Yeah, and they use cameras just to zoom in on things. But this seems even more advanced, especially like as you're wandering through a Target or a Walmart needing to buy stuff and you're wearing these little glasses. And there's only so much you can do with cameras, but you know, if you've got a QR code that can link to the product information, if you can't see it, it's an interesting tie-in. Yeah,
OcuTrucks has a version of that where they use the peripheral vision to sort of bend the view the person who's suffering from vision loss into thinking they're seeing the world precisely right. It's a game changer if you're going blind. It really is.
Yeah, totally. And there's a lot of people that suffer from this, so it's a good thing to do. Yeah,
yeah. I think it's like 25 million people in the U.S., but way more than you would think.
Yeah,
absolutely. So anyway, that's all the show we have, Connell.
No worries.
Come back and see us again.
Lot, it's good.
I know. I mean, Zapper is doing a lot, and I'm not just saying that because of the sponsorship. It's just great to have a friendship with you guys and watch the company develop over the years, and to see that you have not diminished your ambitions. So,
absolutely. Give Casper and all the guys a hug for us.
We'll do.
See you in AWE, right? You'll all be
absolutely.
At AWE.
Absolutely. Yes. Definitely. Very much looking forward to it. And such a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thanks again.
You too. Cheers. Take care. Bye.